now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon with your hosts, Fess and Tanya.
Okay, now we're recording. Yes, I am recording. Okay, for those of you who are turning to episode 10 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, I had just been talking to my co-host Tanya here for about 10 minutes without realizing that we weren't recording.
It was excellently done, though.
Oh, you should have heard it. And now we're entirely going to screw everything up.
But can't top perfection.
No, you cannot top perfection, so we're just going to leave that in the past and reach into our mailbag once again. Sly of Jadrick, .comicgenesis.com or J-A-A-D-R-I-H .comicgenesis.com writes to us about last week's show, which was about developing a style. I just want to answer her when she was asking us. Yes, we were talking about more about developing your signature style versus entering a different... I think we called it a genre style, like anime or such on the last show. So yes, a signature style is more what we were talking about, and Sly was saying that it's quite common and understandable that people, when they start out drawing anyway, that they would copy inspiration first. They wouldn't start... She made it sound like it's not natural for you to start off drawing your own style. Usually it's going to be inspired from something, and that's going to show more prominently when you first start out than down the road. Which I could...
Right.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I just want to take one little excerpt from her email, and she's saying, "Developing a style takes time and effort. You need to learn to recognize what you like and dislike about the pieces you turn out." Developing a style takes time and effort. You need to learn to recognize what you like and dislike about the pieces you turn out and figure out how to maximize the former and fix the later. Some cynics say that style is simply how you mask your weaknesses. I'm not cynical, so I think that style comes from how you see things and how you manage to portray them. And lots of practice. Seriously, lots and lots. Well, thanks, Sly. That's very good information, and I completely agree. Lots and lots of practice. Again, you can find her, a link to her webcomic in the show notes. Let's see. We also received an email from Drawimos. I forget how to say your name. I think your name's what?
D.
D. And I think his name's Eric. Anyway. He was the guy who was basically responsible for the brainstorming session we had a couple of episodes ago. And on that note, we will be having another one this month. I believe the show after the Valentine's Day spectacular we're going to have. Anyway, he's writing on his webcomic, Exeren, which is EXIERN.com, is having a contest for webcomic writers. It seems to be running from February 2nd to March 25th. Well, I'm not going to go over the whole contest here because there's a lot of legal speak on here, but it looks like it'd be fairly confident for anybody who wants to enter this contest to know how the work is going to be used and how
and it's how only
people, yeah, and how people is like yeah. Usage and ownership, copyrights, etc., and all that will be handled. So it should be clearly spelled out about how people should expect things to go about in this thing if they win and how they're going to be entering it. And you can check that out at xrn.com, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes. Like I was saying, we will be having more of those brainstorming sessions again. People seem to like those, and we should be doing one every month, I think. And if it ends up splitting off into another podcast, netcast, webcast, or what have you, we'll certainly let you know. I do want to let you guys know that it is not the Webcomic Beacon's creation. We're simply hosting them. And I just want to give credit where credit is due. Dromos and a few other of his friends had this idea and put it together and said, hey, you know, come on the show, and that's what they did. So I just want to make sure that we're not taking credit for this, but we're certainly glad to have them.
Yeah. We delivered the baby. It's not ours.
That sounds a little gross.
You know, I was a doula. It's in my vernacular.
Well, okay then. let's see. Yes. Commissions.
Commissions. That's where we're going
yes,
with.
Yes. After we talk a little bit about commissions, we will after the first break, we'll be having Obsidian of commissionedcomic.com on the show with us. And, well, Tanya, what do you know about commissions?
Well, my own experience with commissions has mostly been commissioned writing, which it seemed to me seems less risky. When I was commissioning written works of fiction, it's kind of a back and forth deal. So you're kind of developing the story with them, and if they bail, you're not finished with it yet. You haven't spent hours and hours and hours of work on something. You know pretty early on if they're going to bail on you, and then you just tell them you don't want to take the commission. Artwork, I've only had two kind of semi-commissioned pieces, and it was with the incentives where somebody, they donate a certain amount and they get a sketch of whatever they want or a full color piece.
That's not a commission. That's a donation drive.
It is a donation. That's the closest I've gotten.
Yeah, but that's not a commission, though.
Commissioning is where somebody gives you, I mean, the specifics of what they want you to draw.
Yeah.
And they give you money, and then you give it to them. That's
right.
What happens.
And how many commissions have I purchased? You know what? Witchy Bunny still owes me a commission. I paid for a commission like months ago, and then like some crap happened or whatever, but she owes me a commission. It's supposed to be of my character Nemi from my comic PSI, and I gotta bother her about it, but I've been, you know, fairly cool about it because I understand, you know crap has been going on with her and sometimes, and also she is getting married in a couple of weeks after Valentine's Day, in fact.
See, I never know whether to say, like, congratulations or...
Or I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Good for you.
So we may not have her for a couple of weeks after that, so I'll have to, you know, make sure I, you know, recycle some of her stuff. Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Commissions.
You know, as I was looking, you know, looking at some different sources and different places where people are commissioning artwork, mm-hmm. It seems to be a bit of a minefield. There are a lot of situations where somebody paid and they never got their artwork, and a lot of situations where somebody gave them the artwork first and never got paid. I don't know that there's a lot of legal framework that people are using. It seems that...
Using? No. Available to use? Yes.
It's out there. You can write up a contract.
It is, but
I did contracts with my writing. Yeah. I did contracts with my writing, but it was a special circumstance.
Right. I think once I think when you have more under your belt, when you're more recognized, mm-hmm. that I'm guessing it would be easier for you to handle commissions when you're just a small-time person or not well known, let's say, despite it being probably, you know, I don't know how good you are. But just not being well known is a big factor. With someone who's not that well known, people are maybe a little bit more hesitant to pay up front, let's say. And even after you got the image, whether or not they're gonna pay you, if they're just gonna like run off like, ha ha ha, I got this for free, which is very dickish. Yeah. If anybody receives commissions and does not pay for it, that is very dickish.
That's a lot of time spent.
Right.
And
it is.
Yeah.
But once, if you're a big shot and your commissions are a big thing for you, it should be a lot easier to receive a payment before the art is made, a committal, because, you know, they got a lot underneath their belts showing that, yes, I will follow through with this deal, essentially.
See, that's interesting to me, though, because, you know, in any other marketplace, you don't have to be established to expect your money before you hand over the product. I mean, even at drive-through burger joints, you know, you pay at one window and get your food at the next one. It's something that we should be used to, is paying for something before we receive the item. Online auctions, everything works that way.
But there's a little bit more... See, there's a difference between...
Is it because of the time...
No,
that it takes?
It's because in offline, it's right there. And you usually can get a receipt for it and be like, yeah, I didn't get it, and complain to a manager or something. Online, there's no guarantee. There's, you know, scams all the time. And so it's a matter of reputation, I think.
Yeah. And so maybe in building that reputation, you should just expect to get screwed a few times.
Certainly.
I mean, it sounds awful, but...
I mean, people get screwed offline as well, so, you know, people should always
it becomes the pessimism
anticipate
report.
The possibility that there are going to be times in which you're going to be screwed.
Hope for the best, expect the worst, or plan for the worst.
Screwed in a good way.
Because if you're screwed in the good way, then that's illegal anyway.
I mean, I think the safest thing that you can do is, like, if you're doing commissions and you're just studying out and you're doing the pay after you make it type of thing, if maybe you can get half of it up front, you can always, you know, try that. But if you're really just starting out, doing some freebies, I think, to start out, just to kind of, you know, basically show your style. If you haven't already been doing that, I'm saying, you know, do like a little bit of freebies, trades even, and you start to build that reputation to so people can know the type of stuff that you are drawing. People can get more comfortable with you, and then you can start asking for money or start, you know, charging. And I think a good method is, if you're still in that wariness stage and you're not getting your payment until after you receive it, show them a smaller image. They can see that you did it, but it's way too small for them to use it, really.
Right.
And just like, yep, here's the evidence that I have it. Or you just you put it a little bit bigger and you stamp preview right across it, so they really can't use it, and then that should be evidence enough that, yep, here it is, and then you'll pay it, and then they'll get the original version. Because, I mean, come on, it's like you're really gonna, you know, you drew all that and you're like just not gonna give it to them, you know?
Out the time. If at that point they decide to screw you, you're still out the time, but I guess you still have the product. You could always eBay it.
And then you can just, you know, put it in your portfolio for whatever, and with,
or try to sell it elsewhere.
Sell it elsewhere if you can, but it's like you own that image and you can use it for your portfolio work and not be copyright infringing on anything. Because if you just use it, you know, if you're an artist and you have a portfolio, you should know all the rules about portfolio. And it's not like you're going to get in trouble. You may not be able to sell it to anybody else, but you can at least use it and show, hey, this is what I've done. And one thing, I forgot who told me, but I'm sure it's a good thing for that people have probably would like to tell. There's one thing that someone told me, and I forgot who said it, and they said that don't charge beyond your abilities.
Yeah.
There's too many people that ask for like $20, $50 commissions, and you look at their art and you're like, maybe five.
Yeah.
There has to be a demand for your style and your ability. And if you're overcharging, people just kind of won't take you seriously. And you may not be taken seriously for a long time by some of the community. If, you know, they're like shunning you essentially for just being, well, I'm sorry, a dumbass.
Pompous ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it goes back to, again, don't be an ass. I've seen a lot of people at conventions, you know, throwing out dollar sketches, and if nothing else, you're building up that reputation. You know, it's more and more people that have your art that, you know, may want to commission things later, and start off cheap, dirt freaking cheap, and, you know, maybe that's as simple as it is. If you're only getting $5 for that commission, you're not going to be that bummed if they bail on you.
Right.
And if they don't, you've got a reputation, you know? And hey, ask people if you can use them as a reference. Say, can I put your email on my site so that, you know, if anybody's worried that I'm not going to get this done, they can email you and ask. Nobody ever will, right. But, you know, if you offer, it makes you look better.
With that, we're going to take our first break, and we should have Obsidian on the other side.
Brett Hanley with Casual Ramblings.
This may be the shortest casual rambling ever. For one thing, I can't think of anything funny on the subject of commissions. And for another, I'm not much of an artist, and no one has ever tried to give me money to draw them something, so the best I can offer is some very general advice. Before you decide to accept commissions on a regular basis, I would advise that you set your rules down in stone before you even put it out there as an option. Rule number one for you should and must always be that you will not draw trademark characters for commissions, ever. Doing fan art is one thing, but using someone else's property for your own financial gain is a blatant violation of copyright laws and good taste. Other than that, your rules are your own and welcome to them. I would advise that you make a decision on whether you will draw nudity or erotica. Erotica, by the way, is what you get when artists indulge in porn. Darcy Sowers of Codename Hunter made an entry in her live journal a few days ago about her choice not to draw erotica, and she makes a very good case. Essentially, she says that she's very happy not knowing what other people are into sexually, and she'd like to keep it that way. I would like to add that it's an iffy way to start your artistic career. If you have any aspirations towards serious consideration as an artist, any nude art beyond art school body studies will always find a way to haunt you. That's it. Get a recent book on copyright law and read up on the chapter on works for hire. Good luck. Back to you, Fess.
Find more from Brett Hanley at casualnotice.com.
The Webcomic Beacon is proud to be an affiliate of The Geek Media. TheGeekMedia.com has a number of geek-related websites, podcasts, and blogs for you to check out. Check out TheGeekMedia.com.
Webcomic Beacon is hosted by Zephyr.net. Free hosting for free thinkers.
Obsidian, welcome to the Webcomic Beacon.
Thank you.
And yes, we are with Obsidian of CommissionedComic.com. You are a commissioned artist as well as a webcomic artist, a co-host to Extra Life Radio, the podcast, and you are a professor, is that correct?
Yes, that is, that, yeah, that's, I do all that, yeah.
What are you a professor of?
I teach in, graphic design, I teach illustration.
Cool.
Nice.
Well, yeah, I like it a lot.
Excellent. Tanya, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, actually I'd like to start off, talking a little bit about the webcomic. When did commission begin?
Okay, commission began September 2004.
So it's been running for quite a while.
This is its fourth year. We'll be 4 years old in September.
Right. And you've recently struck your 1,000th comic, I saw.
Yeah, that would be exactly a month ago. Right now I'm at 1,030.
Excellent. And what drove you to start doing a webcomic?
Well, it's actually... okay. I had been working on the internet for a year as a commission mm-hmm. artist, exclusively as a fantasy art commission artist. I started on that because I had quit my job at an office. I used to work designing web pages, not making them, not programming, just, you know, designing them. Mm-hmm. And it was a really bad experience. I really don't like offices anymore because of that. Well, yeah, it actually turned out to be a scam company. It was a fake company.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and the guy that was supposed to be my boss just ran off with all the money.
Oh, jeez.
Nice.
So that wasn't exactly a good experience.
No.
So when I got out of there, I said, you know, I'm never going to set foot in an office again, and I started doing commission art. That lasted for a year, and I used to be with an internet host called – I don't know if it's okay to me to say who I was with. You know,
are you going to say anything slanderous and horrible?
Well, I'm not going to insult them, but I am going to say that my experience with them was not exactly pleasant. So let's just say I was with a certain internet host that when the time came to pay for my it was a year after I had started with my webpage, and the time came to pay for it, I had a problem with my credit card in terms that the credit card no longer existed.
Weird.
Ah.
So, you know, I tried contacting them and, you know, see how I could fix that, because all I had was a PayPal account.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it turns out they don't receive PayPal, and I would get no response. And the time came and went, and I lost my webpage. Along the same time, my car, I used to have a small little sporty car, the engine blew.
Oh.
Let's see what else happened. I broke up with my girlfriend.
Nice.
I was having the worst time at home. I used to live with my parents back then. Pretty much everything was just going wrong.
Did you lose any pets at this time too? Because that'd be totally just icing on the cake at that point, it seems.
No, fortunately, I didn't have any pets. But I have trained Kung Fu for many years now, and at that moment also, I was having problems at the Kung Fu school.
Oh, geez.
So life was basically a mess, and I was without a web page, without a job, without any work to do. I had, after a year, managed to establish, you know, some constant clients, and I had no way of contacting them, you know, no, because, you know, I live in Colombia, so I couldn't phone them or anything
right.
And tell them that I was having trouble. So it was basically going out of my mind, and what I decided to do just to keep myself busy was, you know, I started to do this webcomic thing. And that's pretty much how commission started. I just started doing it to keep my mind off of everything else that was going on, and that was it.
So it was just an escape from unlucky misery.
Exactly. And misery has been my faithful companion ever since.
Geez.
You know, it has. I sometimes wonder if you had a luckier life, if you would have anything to write about. Do you think you just run out of ideas if you weren't constantly followed by mishaps?
I've never really thought of myself as an unlucky person. I don't know. I have an ability, or I'm a magnet to just be in awkward situations.
Well, you managed to seem to turn all those lemons into lemonade, it seems. You got a knack for that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you just work with what you work with what life gives you, right. But that's in the long run, I always end up being extremely lucky. It's just nothing ever seems to work out like it's supposed to.
You just take the long way around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I do think I could say that I'm not very lucky, though, or that I don't get along very well with machines.
I do have to say that the strips where God has it in for you are some of my favorites, so maybe it's all for the best.
Well, people do seem to enjoy it when things go wrong for me, so... So, hey, I mean, when things go wrong, at least I have a good idea for a comic.
That's good.
Tanya was telling me about some times in which when a comic would normally go into hiatus, that your comic had gone on a hiatus, but you have done these commissionalathons in place of that?
Well, I used to do that. After the last one, I pretty much told myself I wasn't going to do it anymore. The Commission of Flan is basically what I do because I am absolutely horrible at handling my time. meeting deadlines and stuff like that. I am the worst ever. The only thing I can manage to produce on time and on schedule is the comic, which I never miss. But everything else, thank you. But everything else goes wrong. I mean, everything else is never on time. So the commission of Flan is when I have managed to stack up so many pending commissions that the only way I am going to manage to produce them all is if I just dedicate myself to that nonstop for, the last time it was more than a month, like a month and a half.
Oh, geez.
And that's producing one every day, one image every day. That's pretty much the essence of the commission of Flan, one fantasy image every day. The last time I did it, in order to manage producing all this stuff, what I did was I got a bunch of people to do guest comics. So the comic wouldn't have to miss an update, which is something that has never happened in commission. Commission has never missed an update.
Right.
So people really didn't like it. I mean, even though some of these comics were pretty brilliant, people don't like it.
Huh.
People don't like guest comics.
That's weird. I love guest comics.
I mean, unless we're talking about... Well, no, I mean, maybe one. And especially when it's somebody big. Like, for example, if Scott Kurtz or the guys from Penny Arcade made a guest comic, yeah, people are going to love that. But when you get guest comics from readers or people that nobody knows who they are, stuff like that, people don't enjoy that. People don't like that. And I got so many complaints last time that I said, you know what? Unless it's something big and huge, like, something I can put there and say, this is better than what I do, I'm not going to do guest comics.
Do you still have a lot of commissions building up like you did before? Because you said you don't want to do the commission-a-thons anymore. Is that what I was getting?
Well, I am doing my best to handle my time better, to do that better. And in order to do that, I really had to change the whole way I do commissions. Commissioned, as in the comic, is in an art style that is different from my fantasy art style. Mm-hmm. And the problem was that fantasy art takes a lot longer to make, to produce. So my first priority is always the comic. And doing the comic and fantasy art, I just couldn't manage to produce enough fantasy art to make it financially, what's the word there? Feasible?
Viable.
No, viable?
Yeah, feasible.
Viable, thank you. to make it financially viable for me to work that way. So what I had to do was say, okay, fantasy art is just something I'm going to do for very special occasions or just for myself, and from now on I'm going to do my commissions in the comic style, which I can produce a lot quicker, and that's worked for me.
Yeah, they still look very good.
I mean, I'm not – well, thank you. I mean, it still takes a little bit longer than making the comic, but I can safely produce, two or three of those a week if I want to, and still have time for everything else.
Right.
So it works. What I don't want is to be one of those commission artists that makes like one thing a month and charges like $1,000 for it, because I believe that stuff should be cheap.
it's more readily accessible.
No, really, I don't like. Well, I don't like overpricing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had thousands and thousands of bucks, you probably wouldn't be looking for a commission artist through the internet.
Probably not then. And
so overpricing. No, but besides, it's the target audience.
Oh, right,
it's the target audience. I mean, I mean, my readers are just role-playing gamers between ages normally around 15 to 25, maybe a little older, maybe a little younger. But, I mean, we're not normally talking about people that if I tell them, okay, your commission is going to cost you $600, they're going to go, yeah, sure, whatever, give me two.
Oh, jeez.
No, this doesn't happen.
Right.
So, Sometimes, yeah. I mean, sometimes when I get commissions that are several hundred dollars, normally it's a group of people and they're all gathering, you know, pooling their money to do that. And I mean, while I appreciate their business, it's good to also appreciate the effort they make in order to pay for it.
Yeah.
Right.
And, man, I keep forgetting. Oh, yes, yes. my question was, is basically the commissions your primary, if not sole income right now? I'm not sure how often that you teach, but...
Well, I really don't know the words for it in English. The form that I teach is... I'm not directly affiliated to the university. I'm just the guy that goes and teaches. I don't know how you define
it. A freelance teacher?
You're a contractor.
Yeah.
Yeah, a freelance contractor.
A contractor. So, but normally during classes, you know, during the time where there's classes, mm-hmm. that is my mm-hmm. primary source of income. During vacation time, which is like a couple of months each semester, and here in Colombia, there's two semesters per year. Well, I mean, of course, everywhere there's two semesters per year. But I've noticed that in most places in the U.S., it's like the university is divided by years, while here it's divided by semesters. So in the periods between semesters, I have to hold myself up only with commissions. But during the semester, I hold myself up with what I teach. Lately, it's,
Do you struggle with that? Is it difficult to keep the commissioning up to a level to where you're making your regular income?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am, I'm pretty much as poor and broke as it gets.
We all know the feeling.
I mean, I'm surviving. I'm surviving. I just moved into a new apartment, I'm not going hungry or anything right now, but life, and especially mine with, you know, all that happens to me, can get pretty difficult. My main problem right now is that PayPal doesn't work in Colombia. And to anybody that's thinking about becoming a commission artist, and I say this because I believe that later on you're going to want to focus a lot more on you know, commission – working as a commission artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this right away, I mean, right from the start. If you're thinking about becoming a commission artist, one of the most important things you need to think about is how to get your money. Now, if you're American or if you live in a very developed country, there's no problem with that.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're like me, I mean, PayPal is pretty big, but PayPal does not cover the entire world.
Right.
Yeah,
and one of the things that is really beautiful about the internet and about the way we can work through it is that it is no longer a limitation if you live in some, you know, hole of a country that Satan forgot,
oh, geez.
which is pretty much where I live. I love Colombia and it's really mm-hmm. awesome here and everything, but PayPal doesn't cover it.
Yeah,
and I even talked to them about it. I sent them an email, and they were kind enough to respond and everything. And their response was pretty honest. They basically said, "We're not interested in Colombia, and we have no plans to include Colombia in our coverage anytime soon." So PayPal allows me to make payments if I had a credit card, which I stay away from.
Right,
but that's a personal choice. it allows me to make payments, but I can't receive payments because I don't have a bank account that would be connected
that
to PayPal.
Right.
Exactly.
But you can keep them in virtual PayPal funds, correct?
No. Oh. No. You cannot open a PayPal account if you don't have a bank account to connect it to.
Right.
And I'm talking about receiving money. Sending money, anybody in the world can send money if they have credit.
No problem.
Right. Yeah. No problem. So what I had to do is I had to open – my sister lives in Ohio.
Ah.
Huh.
So what she did is she took one of her bank accounts and she gave it to me. She sent me the ATM card. I opened the PayPal account with that bank account. And PayPal assumes that I live in the U.S.
Ah.
Nice.
And the ATM cards work in any ATM here in Colombia. Now, the problem is if I ever have problems with my bank account, I have no way to access the money that that I receive through my payments, which is basically the problem I'm in right now. I mean, if you looked at the comic last week, you might have noticed that in an absolutely in absolute old fashion, I dropped my backpack from my car.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
from the Jeep.
Yeah, I was driving my Jeep and my backpack fell off from it and I didn't notice. I managed to recover the backpack, but in the meantime, I did call to the bank and, you know, told them to cancel my cards.
Which is good.
Yeah, that is good. But I managed to recover my backpack, but now I have no bank card. And it's going to be a while the bank sends the card to my sister, and my sister in turn sends the card to me.
In Colombia, which I hear has a lovely mail system as well.
Lovely. Well, that is an interesting choice of word. So it gets complicated. I mean, it gets complicated. The exact same thing, except I didn't lose my bank, my backpack. I just had to. I had problems with my bank account. Happened in December, and it gets complicated. It gets complicated because you can't access the money you're making, and you're needing money for rent and all that kind of stuff. But you deal with it. You got to deal with it.
So other than horrendous money problems, have you had any particularly horrible or encouraging experiences with commission work?
Well, commission work is a matter of trust. And I'm not talking about trusting your client. It's a matter of relaxing and just letting go. I know a lot of people that do not go into commission work because they are afraid that somebody might steal their art or that somebody might not pay them.
Yes.
I mean, just think about it. I'm working with a guy, I don't know, in Sweden. And if he doesn't pay me, there really isn't much I can – I mean, the guy owes me what, 70, 80 bucks. If he doesn't pay me, what can I do really? I mean, just trying to force him to pay me would probably cost me a lot more than what he owes me.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of the most important things you got to do when you're working as a commission artist, especially when you're just working as a small commission artist, is relax and be willing to accept that sometimes people are going to, you know, screw you over. On the other hand, I've also had people that send me twice or three times the money they're supposed to pay me because they liked it so much they just think they should pay me more.
Wow.
I mean, it's happened. It's happened.
That's
and
nice.
That's also, it's also really great. Of course, throughout the years, I've just learned that you charge in advance. I charge in advance. Now, specific horrible experiences. Well, the commission of flaws in themselves are...
they seem to be real.
I mean, are a pretty interesting experience. It's basically stacked up commissions throughout a year and then spending 30 days producing 30 art pieces. That is quite an experience. I've had clients order – ooh, I once had a client order like $1,600 worth of commissions.
Holy crap.
It was awesome. It was awesome. It was several art pieces, and I said, oh, this works for me. Just excellent. $1,600. You cannot imagine how much money that is here in Colombia. I mean, we're talking about 3,200,000 pesos.
Nice. That's a good exchange rate right there.
I think you said once on Extra Life Radio that you had that $400 could allow you to live fairly comfortably in a month?
For a month. Yeah, that's true. That's
wow.
true. $400, $500, and I'm set for Jeez. The month.
Wow.
But no, actually, this experience is not a good one. The guy decided he was going to commission all this, and I said, oh, this is all I need. I closed all other commissions, didn't receive anything else, and made plans for the rest of, you know, for another 2 or 3 months just to do that. And it was going to be a good semester, And about a couple of days before that, the client contacts me on Messenger and said, hey, yo, I'm really sorry, but my dog swallowed a plastic bag.
Oh, no.
And
needed surgery.
Yeah, and needed surgery. And that cost me a little bit less than what I was going to commission from you. So I'm going to have to call it all off.
Oh, man. That's a tough
and,
situation.
Stupid dog.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't really get angry at him for it.
Right.
I mean, it's go see to your dog, and I understand and all that. But deep down inside, you are going, damn it.
Yeah.
Damn it, stupid dog.
Oh, geez.
And that happens a lot. I mean, I get a lot of commissions, you know, people that go, hey, I need this and this and this and this. You add it all up. You go, okay, you know, this is going to cost you, I don't know, whatever, $200. They email you back saying, oh, great, let's go for it. And you never hear from them again.
Ugh.
So that happens a lot, actually. That happens each and every month. So.
Well, that's encouraging.
Well, you.
Well, like I said, you need to relax. You need to just go with the flow and this kind of thing.
Well, we're at the end of our time here, but you have been very enlightening, and I'm sure a lot of our guests, our listeners, can take a lot from this. But we're going to have to go right now. But once again, thanks for coming on to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can check out Obsidian's webcomic at commissionedcomic.com. And click on his commissioned art and see what you can purchase for yourself.
Get out of him.
Get out of him, yes. All right. Thanks once
exactly.
again. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
Thank you. No okay, bye.
Bye.
Would you like to get involved with the Beacon? Just send to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com.
Special thanks to Witchy Bunny of HiddenDisguises.com for being our announcer, and also thanks to Brian Lake for providing music for the webcomic Beacon.
And now, webcomic reviews with Diana Knock.
Now this is a review of Truck Bearing Kibble by Jeremy Kramer and Eric Vaughn. It updates Mondays officially at truckbearingkibble.com. I've seen this linked a few places lately, and apparently it's been around since December 2006. I hadn't heard of it previously, so it was a bit of a surprise to me, because of course I know everything. First thing, this comic really wants to be Perry Bible Fellowship. Anyone familiar with Perry Bible Fellowship will recognize a very heavy influence in Truck Bearing Kibble. It employs the same types of subversive punchlines and dry pan anthropomorphism that PBF has been really known for the past several years. There's two big differences, though. Perry Bible Fellowship worked up to its current level of complexity, while Truck Bearing Kibble plunged right in. I think this is a disadvantage. I'll explain why in a sec. Secondly, Perry Bible Fellowship is better at the humor that it does than Truck Bearing Kibble. The jokes in Truck Bearing Kibble are hit or miss with me, I think, because the creators want so much to be bizarre and unexpected with their humor that the punchlines are often either too obscure or otherwise confusing. I mean, even if I get the reference, the jokes don't really seem clever. Example, a strip named Atacalypto. The artichoke hearts are used in an anthropomorphic food ritual sacrifice. It's cute in theory, but the execution lacks any real punch. Confusing panel transitions between 2 and 3 don't really help at all either. I think they would have been a lot better off taking a real lesson from Perry Bible Fellowship and starting simple. Truck Bearing Kibble's ambitions gets in the way of delivering a solid laugh a lot of the time. The comic has its moments. Anytime it combines robots with Rodgers and Hammerstein, so far twice, I get a good laugh. Or having, say, Mary Poppins get knocked out with a sock full of quarters. Maybe I just like seeing 60s musicals get taken down a peg. The thing with this comic is that it has a sort of inconsistency that means that what I find really funny in the archives may not be funny at all to another person, simply because references don't combine in that special way to hit the funny button. If you have a special attachment to the creations of both Jim Henson and Stanley Kubrick, there's going to be a couple strips for you that don't really work for me. Now, the art is nicely polished. The artist obviously knows what he's doing. It's very good at having characters rendered just realistically enough to be disturbing. I think if he works on the storytelling, it'll be really gold in the art department. I'm not really a fan of the site design, I gotta say. The front page is an unattractive-looking blog design with ads. To get to the archives, you have to click on the comics button on the top, scroll to the bottom of the page with the latest strip, and then click on the archives button. There's also no first or last comic navigation buttons, so it's just sort of annoying. Unless you have a really good reason, the last comic should be on the front page. Hint, you do not have a really good reason. Those first and last buttons are easy to overlook when designing a site, but they really make navigation smoother, especially for a newcomer. The random button is fun, but not enough to replace the good overall design, in my opinion. I'd recommend people to try Truck Bear and Kibble if they really like the type of subversive humor and Perry Bible Fellowship, but aren't getting enough of it lately. I know I haven't been. So that's my review of Truck Bear and Kibble, which updates Mondays at truckbearandkibble.com.
Find more from Diana at jinxville.com. Let's hear some webcomic impressions from Aaron Edwards.
Hi, guys. Let's just say the amount of profanity I use is inversely proportionate to how much I've drank. Teddy Bear Trauma at teddybeartrauma.com is a moody black and white comic that makes full use of the medium being webcomics. This one's really slick. The web design is clean but animated, as are some elements in the strips. Prone to violence and sarcasm, this is another case of sweet teddy bear characters doing their worst. If you're a fan of cute morbid humor, Teddy Bear Trauma is 50 strips into something you might enjoy. And since we're running out of actual submissions, here's a random one. Easy Skanking at easy-skanking, but without the G.com, is an incredibly amateur solo project that has somehow made it to number 28 of the webcomic list as of this segment. It's drawn and written by an 18-year-old girl and looks every bit the part. Our two lead girls, Dingy and Spunky, share their Mac Hall-esque experiences but with much more inconsistent art. But, while the art's all anime bullshit, the dialogue and panel pacing isn't half bad, and the perspective of seeing typical guy comic tone from a female author with female characters must be rather endearing for some readers. Even full-colored, it's not much to look at, but the art isn't MS Paint. And there's 60 strips of amusing situations and banter. It's really not the poor girl's fault that this one struck a chord with the readers, but popularity does equal expectations. If Easy Skankin keeps running and keeps developing for another year or two, it might justify its bloated ranking. Oh, and the site design fucking sucks. So, if you're a brave new webcomicker, don't be afraid to submit yourself to Webcomic Beacon's impressions. I believe Fess has the email link. At best, you get your name out there. At worst, well, you haven't heard the worst yet.
Find more from Aaron at anatalie.com.
Just a quick word on some news around the webcomic water cooler. If you go to stripfight.org, as I mentioned last week, they're on round 143, and the theme was This Is How It Ends. They have 9 submissions, which you can go and vote one out of 5 fists, basically rating each submission. And I think next week they'll be picking the winners, and then they'll announce that their next round, 144, in which the theme is infomercials, and that'll start February 12th. But head to stripfight.org and go ahead and vote for the best. Also, on that note, speaking of webcomics, The Web Cartoonist Choice Awards have had their nominations announced earlier this week, and we're going to try to get one of the people from there to talk a little bit about it. But in the meantime, you can go to ccawards.com/2008finalists.html, or just go to ccawards.com and find the link.
Yeah.
Anyway, this let's see, we got some webcomic milestones to finish up right here. And just like to mention, Apathetic Rant at apatheticrant.com has hit 100 strips. So, congratulations on your milestone. Mm-hmm. And if you know of any webcomic, or if your own webcomic has reached webcomic milestones such as 1 year, 2 years, etc., 100 comics, 200 comics, etc., within the last 30 days and we haven't mentioned it, or is going to be coming up in the next few days, send us an email to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com and we'll announce it on the show. Oh boy.
You know, we love all kinds of feedback here at the Beacon. Fess, tell them how they can get involved.
They can... What can they do?
They can call in with an audio file about 30 seconds pertaining to the week's subject at hand.
Yes,
state your
name. Oh,
you could now?
I'm not reading that. You got the script right in front of you?
I do.
Fine, read the script.
People can try calling in with an audio file about 30 seconds pertaining to the week's subject at hand. State your name or screen name, then your site and URL at the beginning. Send it to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. You may also be able to leave a voicemail by finding FessWorks on Skype.
I do want to mention, once again, if you have a young webcomic and you would like Aaron to give his quick impressions about it, please send us an email to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com, and it, like he said, the best that could happen is that we'll mention your site, and the worst that can happen is we won't mention your site. Or would that be the best thing that could happen? Anyway, and actually next week is Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Yay. And we're going to have an extravaganza on the day. when is our show going to come out?
The day after.
Yep, it is going to be the day after Valentine's Day. The better of the 2 days, I believe. Because all the chocolate, all the candy is at least 50% off everywhere you can find it.
And awesome.
That is better than Valentine's Day, I think.
And easily.
Yes. And we are going to be probably dissing a bunch of romance comics and probably talking about a bunch of depressing comics. I don't know. We don't know what we're going to do. So next week, we are going to be having an open forum for those who would like to get involved. And also, we will be interviewing Renee of Anders Loves Maria next week. She will be our interviewee.
Yay.
But as far as this week is concerned, that's it. So get
We're
out of here.
Done.
This has been Fess.
And this is Sonia.
That's all for the Beacon. Be sure to tune in next week.